Today on Blue 58, free agency is looming and the Packers could be spenders this year. Who will they bring to Green Bay, if anyone?
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I'm your host, John Meerdink, and I'm happy to be with you here for another episode. It's time to talk free agency. We're a few days away, 4 days away, 5 days away from the start of a new year league year, and with it comes free agency. The legal tampering period, such as it is, we don't have to go over that bit again, starts Monday at noon Eastern time, which means that we're going to see a bunch of deals announced at like 12:02 Eastern time, which means that there was plenty of tampering going on before the legal tampering period. Funny how that always works out that way. Anyway, we're going to see some stuff happening very quickly here. And if it doesn't happen while I am taping this podcast, we're going to see some moves from the Packers here in the relatively near future. Because the general trend of this offseason is that the Packers appear to be gearing up to, if not be players in free agency, at least have some money to spend. They're not awash with cap space like some of the teams out there always are. They're not going to be signing the ultra big name deals, but they could make some moves depending what they do with some guys that they have on their roster, including David Bakhtiari and Devondre Campbell and a few other guys. But they've taken clear steps to try to clear cap space to this point, and probably will take a few more of them here before things get rolling early next week. So I thought we should talk a little bit about the free agency question. What will the Packers do, both with outgoing and potentially incoming free agency? A few ground rules ahead of time. I want to keep this relatively cap agnostic. Cap space is always going to be a consideration. And I don't want to get into the for the right price conversation. That is something you see all the time among both amateur and professional kind of analysis on this type of stuff. For the right price, you'd be interested in that guy. Well, no kidding. Yeah, everybody's always available for the right price, and every team would sign everyone for the right price. That's what makes it the right price. Would you buy a Lamborghini for the right price? Of course you would. Well, maybe not a Lamborghini, but something, you know, your car of choice. Would you buy it right now for the right price? Yeah, you would. Would you buy a house in the south of France for the right price? Yeah, you would. And maybe I'm sharing something about myself there by listing the things that I would buy for the right price. But you understand what I'm saying. Like, if the price is right, everybody would do everything all the time. The price is going to be right if it's ultra affordable, which is what most people are trying to say when they bring up that line. Then there's going to be three parts to our discussion here. I want to talk about outgoing free agents. We're going to try to answer the question of whether or not the Packers should keep them. We'll talk about reasons they should keep them or reasons they should not keep them. The keep proposition is always going to be assuming that they can come to a deal that fits with all of the other deals and fits within the cap space that the Packers have. I'm not going to try to predict deals that the guys are going to get or try to fit them together. Then I want to look at the needs the Packers may have and how free agency could align with those. And then I'll list a few targets. The targets is the least, I think, important position of this. It's more the trends and the money that the Packers have available that is really going to drive this. And then we'll react to whoever they do or don't sign as things play out over the next couple of weeks. Sound good? Let's do it. Three categories of free agents leaving potentially Green Bay: exclusive rights free agents, restricted free agents, and unrestricted free agents. Exclusive rights free agents are basically they have to take whatever the Packers give them if the Packers decide that they want to sign them. There's no process by which any other team can negotiate with them until the Packers decide whether or not they want to do anything at all. Restricted free agents, the Packers can do a variety of things there. You can slap a tender on for a couple of different amounts. The right of first refusal tender, so no compensation there at all. An original round tenure, which basically if you sign somebody to something and somebody else comes along and you know wants to take them away from them, you can either take them away from you, you can either match the deal or give them, you know, get compensated for the round in which they were originally drafted, or I think the second round tender is as high as it goes. You get a second round pick if that same process plays out. And then true unrestricted free agents, which is really where the big money is. If you're trying to get to free agency, you want to be a truly unrestricted free agent. You control your own destiny within the confines of the market. As far as exclusive rights free agents, guys, the Packers have three of them this year: Caleb Jones, Daniel Whelan, and Patrick Taylor. I don't have any major thoughts on any of these guys. Whelan seems like someone you definitely want back, so that seems like a no-brainer there. Taylor and Jones both seem to me like might as well re-signs. You've invested quite a bit of time in Caleb Jones, getting him from a borderline NFL prospect out of Indiana to a guy that you've wanted to keep around for 2 years now. Patrick Taylor is useful enough as like your third running back or primarily special teams running back. So until he loses his job, you might as well keep him around because you know that at least you can't do worse than Patrick Taylor at that point. So I think you bring all three of those guys back, and then if somebody takes their job in training camp, so you're not really out all that much, so nothing really to worry about there. Restricted free agents, the Packers have two, Zane Anderson and Robert Rochelle. I don't find myself overly excited about either of these guys. I think you could duplicate either of them pretty easily, but if Rich Bisaccia decides that this is what he wants to have, Zane Anderson and Robert Rochelle, I think that I would not be against the idea of bringing them back either. So restricted free agents, if they want Zane Anderson back, that's fine. If they want Robert Rochelle back, that's fine. I don't think there's any reason to get too worked up about either of those guys coming back or leaving one way or another. Unrestricted free agents, this is where it gets interesting, of course. And we're going to go alphabetical by first name among the 10 unrestricted free agents the Packers have right now. Eric Wilson, therefore, is our first out of the gate here. I think your case for keeping him is that he's a core special teamer and non-terrible depth at linebacker. He's not going to destroy you if you put him out there on the field. He's certainly, I think, better than a guy like Ty Summers from a few years ago. If you put him on the field, he's not going to make you look silly as a linebacker. He's not somebody you want playing 40, 50 snaps a game. But for what he can do on special teams and what he can do in a pinch on defense, you could do a lot worse. However, if you're going to make the case for moving on, you can also find other core special teams players. Like Eric Wilson has been nice to have on special teams the last couple of years. You can find other guys like that. And what is the net loss to your team if you lose out on a guy who's playing 300 special team snaps? Sure, some continuity there, but you can always find another guy who's going to play 300 special team snaps for you. Also worth noting, he does turn 30 in September. You at some point get to a point of diminishing returns. You got to spend those free agent dollars carefully. Do you want to spend them on a 30-year-old special teamer? I think has to be a consideration there. I would keep him. Rich Bisaccia tends to like bigger special teamers, and he's been solid enough for a couple of years. I think you could do a lot worse than keeping him around. Darnell Savage is next up. If you want to keep him, I think your case is that you don't want to go into 2024 completely starting from nothing at safety. He's probably your best option if you want to go that route among the Packers guys that are hitting free agency. He's probably the best athlete the Packers have at safety. Rudy Ford might have something to say about that, but Savage tested pretty well himself. Maybe he's not quite what he used to be there, but he's pretty solid as far as athletic gifts go. You could certainly do worse in that respect as well. And he, of the guys the Packers have at safety, has done the most as a pro, which is not saying all that much, but he has been, if not a reliable starter, at least a starter in an NFL defense for a fairly long time here now. If you want to move on from Savage, you point out that, well, you can say that he's done the most of all the safeties, but he really hasn't done all that much. He certainly hasn't lived up to his billing as a former first-round pick. And a fresh start might really be what's best for all sides here. Even if you think Darnell Savage could be a useful player in the NFL still, maybe that's just somewhere else than Green Bay. And as Jeff Hafley comes in and tries to do what he wants to do on defense, maybe it's best if you just start from nothing and try to get guys that really fit what he thinks he wants to do. As he takes over as the Packers defensive coordinator. As we kind of outlined in the last episode of the podcast, I don't want to make a decision on Savage one way or another right now. I think the best thing to do might be to let other people make the decision for you. So wait on Savage. Let free agency play out. If somebody offers him a big deal, you say, go with God, get your big guaranteed money. Whatever you can get, that's fine. Let the draft play out, see what comes your way in the draft. If you can add a couple pieces that you think are as good or better than Darnell Savage, you're set. If the draft breaks badly for you and it's May and you still don't feel like your safety position is where it needs to be, Darnell Savage is still out there. Let's begin that conversation again and see if a deal for this year might be something that could work out for both sides. John Runyon. If you want to make a case for keeping John Runyon, I think that you point to the fact that he has consistently gotten better as a pro. He got better even during his timeshare with Sean Ryan this past year. Those were actually some of his best games when he was splitting time with Ryan. He's still an athletic pass blocker. He's a versatile player. He might still have some juice at tackle if that's something that you decide that you really want to do. As a side note, I'm surprised that he really never got any opportunities as a tackle in Green Bay. Yeah, he's a little bit small for a tackle, but so is Zach Tom. He's in the ballpark of athleticism with Tom, and he was certainly a very good tackle in college. Why not prove that he can't do that before you put him inside at guard? That always seemed like a strange sort of thing to me. But the Packers just never went that direction. The flip side for Runyon is that this is going to sound mean, but he's been in is he the worst Packers starting offensive lineman conversation 2 years in a row now. It's either been him or Josh Myers in that discussion, and neither one has done much to distinguish themselves. For all of their availability on both of those guys, they really haven't dominated their positions. And look, down the stretch, Runyon was openly competing for his job with a guy who really hasn't been super effective as an NFL player to this point. Much like with Savage, I don't think I'm in a big rush here on Runyon. You wait and see how things play out, see maybe what other interest he's getting. Maybe you say to him, look, we'd love to have you back. Don't sign anywhere without giving us a heads up. We'd love to open that conversation, but we don't want to set the market here. If you can get a great deal out in free agency, that would be awesome for you. We'd be super happy for you. Just give us a call before you sign anywhere, and we'll see what we can do. If you really want to make the best case for signing Runyon, you know, if the numbers work out for both sides, signing a guy like Runyon means that you're not obligated to do anything on the offensive line in the draft this year, which is probably a good place to be in. So Runyon does give you a little bit of margin to work with if you want to square things away ahead of the draft and just really let the draft come to you, which is the ideal place to be in. It's a hard place to get into, but it's probably the best place to be. And that's why you've seen the Packers make a couple moves in that regard over the past couple of years, just trying to shore things up before you get to free agency or before you get to the draft, and then you're not obligated to do things. That's really what I think we saw with the safety situation last year. So they signed Jonathan Owens. They signed Tre'Davious Moore. You go into the draft and see, look, if one of the safeties we like falls into our lap, then we can draft him. If not, we've at least guys that we don't hate that we can use in our secondary. And it worked out about as well as that sort of plan possibly could. Safety was one of the weaker spots in the Packers roster, but it wasn't in like an abject dumpster fire of a position either. So at least you've got that going for you if you sign a guy like Runyon. If you sign him, at least you know that you're not going to do worse than John Runyon up front if things go badly for you in the draft. Jonathan Owens is next on our list. If you want to make a case for keeping him, you point out that nobody played more snaps than him on defense. He was reliable when he was on the field. He was exactly what you thought you were getting when you signed him in free agency last spring. A guy who played a bunch of snaps for the Houston Texans, was in on a bunch of tackles, and was a bit of a hit-and-miss guy in terms of assignment sureness from time to time. The problems with his performance were really, I think, a question of expectations more than his actual performance. If you wanted more out of John Owens than he gave you last year, that was probably your problem more than it was Owens' problems. However, it is worth pointing out that he had a ton of opportunities last year and wasn't great. So I think if you're saying like even with low expectations, we played him a bunch and he didn't do much for our defense, that is true. He was a fairly bad tackler and fairly bad in coverage. Look, what else do you want? You can defend the guy for, you know, being a limited player when you signed him, but we signed him and he was still limited. He didn't make the defense any better. Should we try to bring that guy back again next year and hope that he's, what, better than he was this past year? That seems more like hope than an actual plan. And maybe you're just tired of hearing about Simone Biles. That's hard to believe. She seems pretty nice. Not her fault that she's married to an NFL player and that she's very marketable from an SEO perspective, but maybe you just don't want to hear about her anymore. And you would rather the Packers move on from that respect. For me, not about Simone Biles, but I think I'd probably move on. I think there are other guys that you could go with. Of the three safeties the Packers have hitting free agency, he'd be the guy that I would move on from first. I think I'd be a lot more interested in Darnell Savage and Rudy Ford than I would about Jonathan Owens. Keyshawn Nixon. his strongest case for sticking around is that he's really your only option in the slot right now. You want to talk about being forced into decisions at safety or on the offensive line. How about getting forced into decisions at your slot cornerback spot? He's really the only guy on the roster who has done or can do that right now. And he played more than 700 snaps in the slot last season, which is pretty insane. Also, not for nothing, a two-time All-Pro kickoff returner. For whatever kickoff returning is worth to you in 2024, he is pretty good at it. You could say that he's basically a replacement-level player in the slot, probably a little bit better than that. It's also worth noting that along those lines, he had to play a bigger role than he'd really like, probably for Keyshawn Nixon, just because there was no one else who could do that. And I think, again, that the case here for Nixon is a lot like the case for Runyon. You sign him because you want to avoid getting forced into doing something you don't have to do or you would otherwise not have to do in the slot. So I think you re-sign him, but then you look to reinforce that position through other means as well. Let's try to live in a world where we have Keyshawn Nixon, but Keyshawn Nixon is an option in the slot, but not the only guy who can do the job. Joshua Nyman, I guess, would be his proper name there, but Yash is next up in our list here. I'm not sure how he alphabetically gets into this list. In fact, we're way out of order alphabetically on some of these guys because A.J. Dillon is coming up as well. In whatever order I ended up putting them, put it that way. Yash Nyman is our next guy to talk about. You want a case for keeping him. A swing tackle is always valuable, whether he's a starter or a backup. He's still legitimately able to play both tackle spots, and the Packers' tackle situation remains a fairly open question. What do you think about Rashid Walker? He's still probably going to have to compete for that job again this coming summer. Maybe you just reintroduce that competition with Yash Nyman again, run it back, see, you know, round two here, maybe round three, depending on how you count. Is that going to go to Rashid Walker again? However, if you want to make that case, you could just say that, look, Nyman has essentially lost the competition now twice. He was not the first choice coming out of training camp when David Bakhtiari went down. Rashid Walker got first crack after Bakhtiari won an injured reserve. And then they opened things up again during the season, had them kind of splitting time at tackle. And he lost again. Walker outlasted him there at tackle. And down the stretch, he was playing there exclusively. What's really going to change in a third option there? So I think I would probably move on. He's probably going to get an expensive deal in free agency, even if it's not what he could have gotten had things gone a little bit differently over the past couple of years. But still, he's probably going to do fairly well for himself in free agency. Rudy Ford, back to defense. I think the case for Ford is similar to Jonathan Owens. He's basically what you expected start to finish here. Not perfect on defense, but he'll make plays from time to time, which is, I think, more than can be said for Jonathan Owens. Also, I think a more dynamic special teamer than Owens is. But you also have to point out that he was essentially replaced by Anthony Johnson midseason. It'd be kind of reversing course to turn around and give him significant money now. So much like Darnell Savage, much like Jonathan Owens, I think you move on and kind of wait and see how things come to you. And if it works out for him to come back at some point, then you do that. A.J. Dillon. You want to make a case for keeping him around. Continuity, I think, is your strongest argument here. It's normally not something I give a lot of stock to, but in some circumstances, the idea that a player means more to you than he does to another team is real. And that, I think, might be the case for A.J. Dillon. You know what you've got in him. You know exactly what he's going to give you. He seems like a good guy to have around in the locker room. He's well-loved by the community, both in Green Bay and the surrounding community. That's not inconsiderable, put it that way. In theory, he's also a nice compliment to Jones. We really haven't seen that in practice, but if Brian Gutekunst wants a bigger back, A.J. Dillon certainly is one, even if he doesn't always play like one. And that, I think, is kind of the case for moving on here, is that he hasn't lived up to this billing. He was supposed to be this big-bodied, hard-charging back who had the athleticism to make guys miss, had the strength to bowl them over, could be versatile in the passing game, could be versatile in the running game, could do stuff inside and outside. Really hasn't done any of that consistently. If you decide to bring him back, what are you really expecting him? Is he going to be a different player here in year 5 than he's been in years 1 through 4? That seems more like hope than a plan at this point. If you're paying a guy for future performance, that's basically a hope-based outcome, I think, on A.J. Dillon. So I think, like a lot of the other guys here, you got to wait and see. I don't mind the idea of re-signing him and drafting a guy if you want to make sure that you have some stability there before you make any other decisions. The Packers might actually need to figure out three different running backs, so you might as well answer one of those questions and get him under contract now and figure out the rest of the position later on. Two more outgoing free agents for the Packers, both of them tight ends. The first is Josiah DeGuara. If you're making a case for DeGuara, I think you say that in 2023, he's basically what he was supposed to be when the Packers drafted him, which is to say a guy who can play a little in the backfield, a little in the slot, a little as an inline tight end. So that's something. He also plays a lot on special teams. The unfortunate thing that is that in 2023, he was not very good. He did not play very much. And even when he was doing the things that he was supposedly billed as being kind of a game changer at doing, it just didn't amount to very much. So I think as far as the Packers' outgoing free agents, he's one of the easier calls here. I think you move on and you don't think about it all too much. He'll probably catch on somewhere and be kind of the same guy that he's always been. I just don't think there's much value or upside to keeping him in Green Bay. Tyler Davis, as much as it pains me, is kind of in the same boat there. He's a core part of their special teams in 2022. And would have been again, I think, in 2023, except for his torn ACL. So that's kind of a weak case for bringing him back, because the flip side is that if you do bring him back, you're talking about, at best, your third tight end coming off a torn ACL in a world where you've already got Ben Sims, who's probably better on offense than Davis was already. I think you move on here, as cruel as it is. Maybe not cruel, but just as unintentionally cruel, put it that way. Football is just tough business, and he had a ACL injury at a really difficult time here, so he ends up on the outs just because going into a contract year, he tore up his knee, and that's a real bummer, but that's the way it is for guys like Tyler Davis. So if those are the outgoing free agents, we all know the state of the Packers roster. We saw the team throughout all of last year. What needs do the Packers have? I think there are three big needs, and one kind of secondary need here too that I think is so kind of niche that it's hard to really make it a primary area where you want to spend money in free agency. But the first and most obvious one is safety. You're looking at as close to a full rebuild of that position as you can really get right now. There's just so much turnover by design and by necessity at safety that you're starting from scratch, and you almost have to spend in free agency so you don't end up having to do everything on one weekend in April to try to figure out your position for 2024. Inside linebacker also strikes me as another need here. There's nobody other than Quay Walker that you're really super excited about, and I say that as a pretty big Isaiah McDuffie fan. As good as he was in 2023, you probably would like to upgrade. And Devondre Campbell seems as good as gone, so your upgrade over McDuffie is probably not on the roster right now. And then running back. As we hinted at in the A.J. Dillon discussion there's going to be some kind of need here. It kind of depends on what happens this weekend, what that need is going to be. Short term, A.J. Dillon might be gone, and it's not impossible that Aaron Jones could be gone. I don't think that's likely, but it's not impossible. So it's not impossible that the Packers could be going into next week needing someone to be, quote-unquote, the guy right now. If A.J. Dillon is gone and something unexpected happens where the Packers want to part ways with Aaron Jones, suddenly you're looking at a situation where your top two running backs are Emmanuel Wilson and Patrick Taylor. Not ideal as you're looking to build around Jordan Love and this very promising Packers offense. If you look at a couple moves that shake out, making this more of a long-term question, Aaron Jones comes back, A.J. Dillon possibly comes back, you're really probably looking at 2025 and beyond. So if both of those guys come back, I would say running back is all but off the board for the Packers in terms of free agent spending. Then the kind of sneaky need I alluded to there was the slot. I think this is a need, though if you bring back Keyshawn Nixon, you can probably roll the dice on a draft prospect. I don't think I would want to be spending on a guy who's going to be one of or perhaps your primary slot defender in free agency, just because you're going to have to spend quite a bit of money there unless you can really find a diamond in the rough, like basically like Keyshawn Nixon, who has done the job in a limited capacity in the past and is now going to do it more for you in Green Bay. That seems like a lot of ifs and possibilities that have to break your way for that to be something that you really want to spend on. So I am not super optimistic about the idea of spending on a slot guy, but I would put it out there as something that you at least have to consider. So who are some targets the Packers should consider? I want to make this a pretty quick thing. I don't think since so much of free agency is driven by economics more than player quality, the old line is that you're giving A-plus contracts to B-plus players. I don't think there's a whole lot of value in going super in-depth on what guys could and could not offer. If you really want to try to dig and find one of those diamonds in the rough, you can. But I think looking at a couple of the obvious names here in each of these categories is the way that you want to go. The first position group up here is safety. I think it might be harder to find a really reliable box guy than a deep guy, because it looks like the Packers are going to have two kind of safety roles in Jeff Hafley's defense. You want your deep safety, of course, but then you've got to have basically your insert guy, the guys that are going to drop down and act as a linebacker, act as a slot defender. You're sort of versatile guy there. I think it might be easier to find a super high quality just deep guy and spend a lot of money on that than it would be to find a box guy that you're super excited about. But there are some options there. But if you're going to spend in free agency, this is the place to do it, in my opinion. This is the Packers' biggest need throughout their entire roster, and I think the place that their money could make the biggest impact. So if you're going to spend money on something, I think safety is the place to do it. There are three guys that I think I would consider at safety. I mean, there are a bunch of guys out there, but the three that jump out to me are Xavier McKinney, Julian Blackman, and Jeremy Chinn. Xavier McKinney recently of the New York Giants has two big selling points, both age and versatility. Age, he's not yet 25, he'll turn 25 this summer. And versatility, he plays all over or played all over the Giants defense, down on the defensive line a number of times, nearly 400 snaps in the box, played a good deal of time in the slot as well, lined up a corner, lined up in the free as a free safety, did a lot of different things for the Giants. As a result, fit would kind of be a question there, but I think he's worth rolling the dice on. Does have some injury concerns, played just 6 games in 2020, just 9 games in 2022, but relatively solid other than that. Julian Blackman, recently of the Colts, had a similar usage pattern to McKinney, turned 26 or will turn 26 in August. I think he's probably a similar caliber player to McKinney, but your mileage may vary there. I don't claim to be super up-to-date on the guys on other teams' rosters. If there's somebody out there who runs a podcast of another team that for some reason is talking about, wants to know about Packers free agents, I could provide a lot of insight there, but not so much on guys that are on other teams. I don't have a pro personnel department here at Blue 58 as much fun as that would be. But I think both McKinney and Blackman would be some high-caliber targets for the Packers. And then Jeremy Chinn, I think he is your mega reclamation project here. Almost exclusively a box guy, essentially phased out of Ejiro Averro's defense last year because of some coverage issues, more of a run-and-hit guy, a run-support guy, but a phenomenal athlete, taking a few picks after A.J. Dillon in 2020. I think this might be poisoning the well here a little bit, but he's basically like what Josh Jones was supposed to be when the Packers drafted him in the second round in 2017. A big physical safety who's supposed to be able to play deep and in the box, really just works out to being more of a box guy. But his first couple years in the league, he was a guy who made a lot of plays near the line of scrimmage, was a little bit iffy in coverage, but something's got to give somewhere, and having a guy who can at least do that would be a step forward from where the Packers have been at safety these last couple of years, and he'd be a significant upgrade size-wise from where the Packers have been these last couple of years as well. Linebacker. Looking through the available guys, there are very few that for me really move the needle as someone you'd want the Packers to make sure they go out and get. I think you're basically looking for someone who's essentially a plus version of Isaiah McDuffie, assignment sure, a run stuffer. if you're a weirdo like me, you remember B.J. Goodson and Antonio Morrison from back in 2018 and 2019. We described them as sidekick linebackers for the Packers. You've got your guy who's going to make the majority of your plays, be your every down linebacker. At the time, Blake Martinez, now it's Quay Walker. You need a guy who's going to be with them and soak up some reps as well, be solid, be assignment sure. That's what Goodson and Morrison were. That's what McDuffie is now. Now you're really looking for the next version of that guy, and that's something that the Packers really didn't have this past year, as good as Isaiah McDuffie was. So if you're looking to buy in linebackers, there's two names that kind of jumped out a little bit for me. Zach Cunningham is one. He is a little bit older. He's entering his age 30 season, but he had a pretty solid bounce back year with Philadelphia in 2023, was good for Houston a while back, was pretty solid in Tennessee. If he was really, really cheap, that might be the sort of guy that I would consider, because I think he would be that upgrade from McDuffie. Pro Football Focus also floated the name Drew Tranquill, who played this past season with the Kansas City Chiefs after playing four seasons as a former fourth-round pick for the Los Angeles Chargers, 6'2", 234 pounds. Pro Football Focus grades him much better in coverage than against the run, which is a possible use case for him if you want to flip-flop the role that they've had Quay Walker in a little bit, have Walker focus more on the run-oriented stuff and have your kind of sidekick linebacker be more the coverage guy. That is a route you could go. If you're trying to use Walker in some more versatile ways, maybe as a pass rusher, that's something that you might want to consider. Tranquill at least fits the bill as a guy who can do it in coverage. So maybe a name worth keeping in mind there as well. Finally, running back. Generally speaking, I do not want to be spending at the top of the running back market at all. This is something the Packers should probably only do out of necessity. If something really goes sideways with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon over the next couple of days, this would be a situation where you'd probably want to spend in free agency. But outside of that, I don't have a lot of confidence in what the Packers would be able to bring in free agency that would be worth the money they'd be spending to get a guy in free agency. But a couple of names I think are worth watching. First, Antonio Gibson, recently of Washington. I just cannot quit this guy. I liked him coming out in the draft. I think he could do a lot of versatile things. I think in a smaller role in Green Bay, he might be better than he was in Washington, where they were really leaning on him heavily the first couple, two, 3 years of his career. Had a little bit of a smaller role this past year. It's a little bit nicked up injury-wise, so that's worth remembering. But I think, shoot, if you're looking for a guy who can provide some quality depth for you, that might be it if you bring just one of Jones or Dillon back. Alexander Mattison out of Minnesota is possibly interesting in this respect too, but he's kind of an example of the problem with free agent running backs. Anybody that you've heard of at all levels are going to be more expensive than what you could probably get comparably in the draft. Like, Mattison is not one of the elite backs in the free agent crop. Neither is Gibson, but they're both going to be more expensive than like fifth, sixth round draft pick at running back. There may not be many guys in the draft. There may not who are, you know, worth drafting, but at least they're not going to cost you $3-4 million against your cap this year to be a backup running back, which is what Gibson and what Mattison are going to be, or just about any other running back that you can envision the Packers signing in Green Bay. That having been said, Packers Wire noted this a couple of days ago. Is either Zach Cruz or Paul Bredel. I'm not sure who it was. I just saw that. I read the article. I did not take note of who wrote it. I don't think we can dismiss the idea of the Packers being active in the running back market. They were at least interested in Jonathan Taylor before he signed his extension with the Colts last year. They nosed around a little bit on Saquon Barkley. The Packers have put some weird stuff out there in terms of making big splash moves over the past couple of years. I tried to trade for DJ Moore, not a running back, I know, but a couple of years ago, DJ Moore was in their sights. The Panthers said no. As it turns out, rightly, they ended up getting quite a package of, they ended up including DJ Moore in quite a package there, but might have been better off just taking the first round pick from the Packers. But the point is, the Packers have been willing to do some crazy stuff or try some crazy stuff, and it just hasn't worked out. I don't think we can rule out them doing some weird and kind of wildcat stuff in the running back market. And who knows, maybe that involves a running back that we've all heard of ending up in Green Bay. Saquon Barkley, you never know. That would be kind of wild to think about. Not sure how wise of a move that would be, but I don't think we can rule anything out with Brian Gutekunst making the calls in Green Bay. So I've got for you in this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I'd appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with someone you think will enjoy it. It's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation you and I are having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.